Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands for the super athletic stuff, like running gear for cruising up the trail.
Woo!
And the super athlete-ish stuff, like fishing gear for chilling by the creek. Nice cast. Fitness apparel to push for higher reps. You got this. And golf balls priced so you can afford to lose one. Or a few. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athlete-ish, Sierra's got it.
Study
and play come together, on a Windows 11 PC.
And for a limited time,
college students get
the best of both worlds.
Get the Unreal College Deal. Everything you need to study and play with select Windows 11 PCs. Eligible students get a year of Microsoft 365 Premium and a year of Xbox Game Pass Ultimate with a custom color Xbox wireless controller. Learn more at windows.com/student offer. While supplies last, ends June 30th. Terms at aka.ms/college PC.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Bituation Room's Candidate Corner, a very special California edition of Candidate Corner. Jump in, get in. I'm not making you guys go through the music because my guest doesn't have too much time because he's very busy on the campaign trail. So we're going to do this. It's going to be not quick and dirty, quick and clean. I've got some great questions, and I'm excited to have you here. Like and share the stream. Let people know that you're watching live. If you're listening in the future, amazing. Thanks for pressing play, and let's get into it. Let's bring him in. He is a former hedge fund manager turned political activist and philanthropist. He founded an organization called NextGen, the largest youth voter engagement organization in U.S. history, and co-founded the Beneficial State Bank in 2007, which is a nonprofit community development bank that loans money affordably to working people, small businesses, and nonprofit community projects that are shut out of regular banks. He also famously ran for president in 2020, and he is an author of the New York Times bestselling book, Cheaper, Faster, Better, How We Will Win the Climate War. And he is my very first billionaire on the Bituation Room. Please welcome gubernatorial candidate Tom Steyer. Hi, I forgot to mention you were running for governor here in California.
Hey, Francesca, how's it going? I'll start with that.
Hey, thank you so much for taking the time to be here or be there and talk to me. Let's just get into it. You're my first billionaire on this program. So will you become a patron of the show at the highest tier, which is $100 a month?
Absolutely. I'm getting off this and I'm signing up because I need to know what you think.
Yes. You know, you got to pay for that. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to tell you what I think until you pay for the highest tier. Great. Okay. So I've already gotten money off of you in the first 2 minutes. Love it. Let me just be honest. When I first found out you were running for governor here in California, I did a little bit of an eye roll. And the reason I eye rolled was because it seemed like, why does a billionaire have to be the governor? Why can't the billionaire maybe support a candidate that you like, you know, someone who is a leader in the community, someone maybe with more political experience than yourself? Why do you think you're the person for this job personally?
Well, Francesca, if you look at this race, there's only one person who stands for change. There's only one person who's a true progressive across the board. And there's only one person who's taking on the corporate special interests. We don't need a billionaire. If there were someone else who's doing what I'm doing, I would be supporting them. I completely agree with you. I think people are skeptical of billionaires. So am I. You know, we've seen so many of these people behave so badly that of course people are skeptical. But let's look at what's really going on. In this race, I'm the only billionaire on the ballot, but I'm not the only billionaire in this race. The billionaires in the state of California and the big corporations in the state of California are supporting the other candidates, and they're spending tens of millions of dollars to stop me. And the reason they're spending that money to stop me is they know that I'm the person who believes in taxing billionaires more, even if it hurts me. I don't view it as hurting me. I'm happy to pay the tax. I'm the person who's in this race who's willing to tax billionaires. I'm the person who's going after the corporate monopolies in electricity. I'm the person who's standing up to oil companies, not taking their money like other people running for governor. Mm-hmm. You know, so in every one of these, I'm the person who's for single payer and will get it done. Every one of those stances is bringing millions of dollars of independent expenditures against me. If someone else would take those stances, if someone else would stand up for the working people of California and bring down costs, if someone else would go to the special interests and tell them we're changing it and I'm the person who's going to do it, I'd be behind them.
But okay.
Show me that person, to be honest, because that other person doesn't exist.
There's a lot of Californians who are incredible, you know, community leaders, but I will just say that, yes, they are not running currently, but I feel you. I take the answer. So as a billionaire, do you think you should exist? And I realize that's a little bit of a weird question. It's kind of like, what if your mom had aborted you, but when you're pro abortion rights, do you think you should exist, Tom Sire?
So let me say this. I never inherited a parent penny. My wife, Kat Taylor, and I have said, we're going to give this money away while we're alive. We're in the process of doing it. I'm not dying a billionaire. We're going to use the money I made by starting a business to support progressive causes, working people, and the natural world. But having said that, let me make you the argument for what I do think is necessary. California has half the growth in the United States. This is a state that imagines and creates the future. And people do that. So for instance, Steve Jobs started Apple Computer on a $15,000 loan. And now it's a huge, incredibly valuable company, but more than that, employs tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people, including in California. Do I think that we need that kind of entrepreneurial drive? The people who create, six of the biggest corporations in the United States are here, and most of them were started after 1995. Do I think that's good for California? Yes. Now, let me tell you what I can't stand. This is a system that lets people do that. This is a system that's been built by poor people, by working people, by a bunch of people for 1,000 years. So most of them couldn't read or write. And a lot of them died in the mud for democracy, for the rule of law, for liberty, for all the things that these people come from all over the world to use our system to create those companies. So I'm happy for it to come. But let me say this. This system still works because of the working people in this state who work their ass off, who are poorly paid, who are sincere, and live in their cars.
But the question is pretty simple, though, right? Like, should billionaires exist or not? Should you have been able to amass, I think, $2.5 billion? Yes or no?
Yes, but I'm giving that money away. I believe we should be taxing that money much more aggressively. I believe that if part of being a successful person who started a company is to say, I did it within a society that was fair and just.
Right.
That money was shared. And in fact, part of the pride I take in my accomplishment is that it was part of a system where we invented the 21st century the way it should be in California.
Okay.
If I hadn't done that growth, it wouldn't have happened, but it also wouldn't have happened if I'd spent my time trying to hang on to it instead of sharing it with the other people in the state.
But you see what I'm getting at. I mean, yes, the people in the audience and the people, you know, throughout this country, but specifically California, you know, this is a state that went to Bernie Sanders in primaries, right? In the last primary specifically. And we are a community and a people here in this state that want to be on the front lines of this. And we see the way billionaires, a lot of them in this state, who are doing massive amounts of harm. We don't want to be waiting on the benevolence of someone like yourself who says, well, I'm going to direct my money for good. We want to actually tax y'all out of existence. So are you on board with taxing billionaires to that level, to the point where $1 billion should actually be illegal given the amount of income inequality and given the money that you made your back on whose back you made your money on? You know what I'm saying? So like, yeah, that's my question.
Talk about this in the real world. Tomorrow, there's going to be a debate on TV. Mm. There are going to be 7 people on that stage. There's one person on that stage who will say that he would vote for the billionaires tax. And it's me. The other people will say they definitely wouldn't. And let me say this.
I think Katie Porter is pro 5% billionaires tax.
I'm not sure. That's not in the past.
That's
okay. If she did, I don't know it. But let me say one other thing.
Yes.
Our revolution endorsed me. The organization that Bernie actually started endorsed me, and they said, we don't believe we're doing this, but this is the most progressive person in the race. And I'm going to check because I really thought I was the only person who was willing to vote for the billionaire's tax. But let me say this. I absolutely believe that billionaires and big corporations need to pay their fair share, and it's not happening.
Got it. Got it. No, we can move on. I look, let me be upfront. I've read your website, and I'm impressed by it. Quite frankly, I think it's detailed, and I think what it has is some big ideas. I think California needs to be a leader, not just, you know, when it comes to income inequality and corporations and taxing the billionaires and the 1%, but climate change, housing, and things we're going to talk about in a little bit. Why? Let's situate this, because I've been watching these debates and I am so floored with how divorced they are from the national discussion. Like, what's happening nationally is nothing short of a hostile fascist takeover of our government by a bunch of crooks, and who are also white nationalists and children at the same time. Who knew it was possible? A bunch of baby Hitlers, really, in my book. My question to you is, why in this time of fascism do you think it's important to roll out some of these big ideas rather than simply be in more of a defensive crouch and just kind of, you know, tweet back, i.e. Governor Gavin Newsom? Tell me why these big ideas matter right now.
I want to get to opposing Trump, but let me start why these big ideas matter. Because people in California are suffering. Because the majority of people in California cannot make ends meet at the end of the month. Because millions of Californians are giving up their health care so they can pay their rent. Because people in California are living in their cars. Fully employed people cannot afford rent because healthcare is chewing up every family's budget in California, every business's budget in California, and the budget of the state of California itself, because we need to build houses. It's not a joke, because the electric monopolies are charging Californians twice as much as the rest of the country pays for electricity, because the big oil companies are both ripping us off at the pump, which I say we should have a windfall profits tax, and polluting with impunity in our state, both in terms of old-fashioned pollution that gives you asthma or kills you, and also in terms of burning down the planet and not paying for it. So in answer to your question, we have real issues for real people right now that have to be addressed. But let me say, in terms of Trump, you say he's a crook. Look, I'm sure you know this, Francesca. I started an organization in 2017 to get 8 million signatures to say this man is a crook. I know from being in boardrooms. I know what a crook looks like. Him.
Yeah.
Looks like a crook. He is a crook. He's stealing money on a huge scale. But he's also trying to destroy our democracy in our country. And so we say, is that the only thing you can do? Well, it turns out that can't be the only thing we do, because the truth is, the way we're going to beat him is by being better and actually delivering shared, what I call shared prosperity, but what you might describe as a just economy, a just and successful economy. We have to do that.
I like just economy better, but depending on where you're campaigning, Tom, you could say shared prosperity that will work in certain areas of California.
It's necessary when the way we're going to beat Trump ultimately is the way Minnesota beat him.
Yeah.
The way the civil rights movement won, by showing we're better, by showing that people are doing well here, that actually they can afford to buy a house, actually they can afford health care, actually we have an economy that pays them a living wage, and they can buy a house, and we have great education. When we show that and you see masked men with ARs assaulting people and racially profiling them, I want everybody in the country to go like, do we want to be like California, or do we want to be like these thugs from DC who are failing at every level and malevolent? And
absolutely,
so it is important that we answer people's needs. It is important that we push for justice economically in this state.
Agreed. Let's talk about healthcare. You, like actually Gavin Newsom, are campaigning on single-payer healthcare in California. Gavin Newsom has since abandoned it. He has left people uninsured or subject to insane market prices. Like myself, I buy it on the marketplace. You believe in single-payer universal healthcare in California. What will you do to get it done? And how can we trust you to not abandon it once you're in office?
So let me say this, Francesca. I want you to take a look at my record, because I've been willing to take on corporate special interests when the legislature wouldn't. You know, we did it with the oil companies in 2010 to protect cap and trade. We did it in 2012 with multinationals outside California who weren't paying fair taxes here, and we made them do it. And we did it with the tobacco companies in 2016. And every time people said, can't get done, the legislature can't do it, you can't do it, it's a joke, you're going to lose. And every time we smashed them. Let me say this, we are going to get this done. We are going to do whatever it takes to get it done. And that is my history of getting results and keeping fighting even when there's a setback. And there may be setbacks, but I'm not going to stop. And it's a difference. And I can say, when I've taken on a public fight, and for instance, I did a public fight on energy policy in three states outside California. And in one of them, we lost. And we called him up the next day and said, just so you know, we're coming right back as of today. And and they made a deal with us that actually gave us what we wanted, because they're like, we can't keep fighting him. We're going to keep fighting, and we're going to get single payer because we have to. And let me say this. I'm sure you know this, Francesca. This state can't afford not to get single payer. We can't afford it. It's chewing us up, and it's absolutely taking money from every other thing this state stands for and wants to pay for, including education. I'm the only person who's running for governor who's talking about education, who's talking about funding education. We're in somewhere in the 30s in terms of how good an education state we are. We used to be number one, literally number one.
That's impossible.
In the 30s. We can't. That's not acceptable. And no one else is even talking about it or has a plan on how they're going to address it. And I have a plan.
So just so you know, I think later this week you're going to have a call with nurses for STIR, because you have the endorsement of the California Nurses Association, who believes in CalCare, again, single payer here in California. That's a pretty big endorsement in my book. I'm excited to see it happen. I know, again, on your website, you sort of detail, you know, you'd convene immediate meetings around, you know, like and commissions around actually trying to roll out single payer. And I'm excited to see that. Let's move on to housing. This is obviously a massive concern. I'm interested in your ideas for protecting renters and also for making housing affordable without simply relying on market solutions. And as a former hedge fund guy, I know that's hard, but what can the California government do to actually take housing off the market and protect housing for as a human right and make sure that it can be available, not just accessible, but actually, you know, given to people, right? In addition to protecting renters. That's two questions, I guess, in one.
In terms of protecting renters, I'm for enforcing all the renter protections that prevent rent spikes. And I'm also in favor of greatly expanding renters' credits. Basically, you're allowed to write off your mortgage payment, but you're not allowed to write off your rent. That seems completely unfair. And that's the first thing that would put money into every renter's pocket.
Yes.
That's how I deal with rent. But the long term, we really need to build a lot more. You're absolutely right. And there are five things, you know, I always say, there's no silver bullet, it's silver buckshot. So I want to talk about the things that other people are talking about that are true. Mm-hmm. Is like speeding up and reducing the cost of permitting, doing dense zoning around public transportation. Yes. Using new manufacturing techniques. I was the first person saying, now everybody says it, where you basically manufacture it, construct it offsite and assemble it onsite to drive down the cost by a third, which we need to do. But then there are two things that no one else is talking about, which I think goes to the heart of your question. The first one is we need the cities and counties to permit this and work with us. And the reason that they're not, a big subtext to this whole thing, is the cities and counties don't want it. And the reason they don't want it and they drag their feet and they put in fees up to 20% of the cost of a house is because they don't have the money to take care of the people in the houses that are going to be built for education and healthcare. So they fight it and they put in big fees. I said on day one, we're going to close a corporate tax loophole for $22 billion that's going to enable us to pay for the education and healthcare. So it goes from being an unfunded liability to a funded liability. And now we can say to them, no, you have to work with us and we have some power over this. So we're going to insist that we get these houses zoned and built fast.
That's so You're making these connections. Right. I'm hearing you're making these connections between, again, which, you know, we didn't talk about, but yes, closing this property tax loophole that has saved corporations, you know, billions of dollars.
Hundreds of billions of dollars. $20 billion a year since the 1980s.
let me say, my petticoat, if I had one, is going
on. Endorse that. I'm saying I'll do it on day one. There's no one else running for governor who will say, that's a good idea, I'll do that. Nobody, they don't want to take them on.
And redirecting that into, so you're saying the reason cities and counties might not want to is because there's a bunch of social services that come along with housing people. I mean, whether these are people, you know, low income housing or people who are formerly unhoused. And it's like, but with single payer healthcare, with improvements in education, you're going to give them sort of the social service support so that this housing suddenly looks appetizing and a priority.
And let me say, I was talking to a mayor in the East Bay on Saturday, today's Monday. Mm-hmm. And he was like, if you do that, I am so behind you. Mm. And I was like, I'm definitely doing this. What are you talking about? And he was like, let me say, no one else is talking about that. I'm absolutely opposing it just the way you're saying, and I will absolutely support it if you do what you're saying. And the third thing is financing. I mean, the last thing is financing. Look, our nonprofit bank has financed 17,000 low-income housing units. I know the state of California does not give good financial support to people who want to buy a house. We're bad at it. We don't know what we're doing. We're not giving the kind of down payment assistance we should be giving. We're not giving the kind of, you know, in rate breaks we should be giving in terms of what we charge. And we're not reusing the money so that we finance everybody and just keep the money moving to keep people moving through. People need to believe they can buy a house, and then they need to buy a house. So the California dream is you can buy a house and you get great public education. We're not allowing either.
And walking distance to a taqueria. I think those are the three. Oh. Walking distance to a taqueria, afford a home, breathe the air. Let's go to homelessness, because you look, I've watched you in the debates. You're saying something that I actually haven't seen and heard other people say. You said something that struck me, which was that people don't start off on the streets with mental health issues or addiction, but that being unhoused can lead to those things. And honestly, it's a breath of fresh air, because the stats prove that out, that people develop mental health issues as well as obviously addiction issues while living on the street. You said something about interim housing, and that you don't have to be clean or keep a pet, and you can keep your pet when you move into them, which can be prohibitive for a lot of people who don't want to go because, yeah, maybe they're not clean, or maybe they do want to keep a pet and there's a lot of rules to get them into interim housing. Tell me about that. Why did you say that? What should we understand about our unhoused Californian neighbors?
Look, I think what people need to understand is how stressful, how dangerous, how vulnerable it is to be on the street. And that is something that produces immense mental health pressure on every single one of those people. And the current strategy we have is short-term shelters, which people don't want to go to. They don't think they're safe. They definitely can't bring their animal. And a lot of times you're supposed to be clean. And the truth is, people fight going there because they don't want to be there. And then we have permanent housing that takes 7 years. So for 7 years, you're suffering. You're at risk. You're basically being, your mental health is being assaulted on a daily basis. And those long-term keys cost $750,000 to $1 million. As a strategy, it hasn't worked. And what I'm saying is, look, I would much rather give someone rental assistance to keep them off the street.
Yes.
I would much rather get someone off the street as fast as possible into an interim housing solution, which looks like a room with a key where you can bring your animal. And think about people on the street. If you're under an immense amount of stress and danger and isolation and loneliness, your dog might be your best protection and your best friend. And you, it's really important to you. So you can bring your animal. There's shared dining and laundry facilities. It is safe, and you get mental health and other wraparound services. It's fast. We need to get people off the street. And the other thing you were saying as the third thing you need to be able to buy a house. You need to have great education. You need to be able to walk to a taqueria.
Yeah.
And I'm agreeing with you because let's take that as the symbolic statement that we want vibrant, fun, walkable neighborhoods for families. Okay.
Yeah.
That's really got to be true. And for a lot of people, we need to have those be true so that a kid can walk to the taqueria. So
quick follow-up.
And feel safe. And keeping those neighborhoods safe is the byproduct of keeping our streets safe and clean.
We don't have a lot of time. I have three more really important questions. But on a follow-up to homelessness, Governor Newsom famously, and this is obviously about, you know, addiction services and harm reduction, he famously vetoed a harm reduction bill creating safe injection sites in the year 2022, almost as kind of like a, you know, a setup to his eventual run for president, which I think we all know he's going to. Would you have vetoed that bill to create safe injection sites?
No, I would not have done what the governor did.
Okay. Would you personally, sweep unhoused people's dwellings as Governor Gavin Newsom has done?
What we would try and do, look, something like 75% of the people want to move into what I just described. If someone has really got huge mental health issues, you've got to get them in a position where they can actually get care. But that, I think, is complete. Look, what I'm talking about, I think, is the most compassionate, the most effective, a much less expensive solution on a societal basis, and one that actually creates the outcomes that the state wants and needs.
Okay, let's go to immigration. You've made headlines saying you believe we should prosecute ICE agents for their crimes. I love that. You're not going to get any disagreement over here. There are, however, 8 concentration camps in California currently. They're being run by private prison groups, CoreCivic, Geo Group, egregious human rights violations unfolding. Your hedge fund managed a $90 million investment in what is now CoreCivic. How do you explain that to voters or would-be voters as governor, why you were invested in that? And then as governor, what will you do to stop these abuses and or shut down these detention facilities?
So let me say this. I ran an investment business and we did make an investment in private prisons 22 years ago. And 21 years ago, I realized it was a mistake and we got out of it. So more than 20 years ago, we were out of it. But I didn't just say I made a mistake and got out of it and that's the end of it. I have worked for rehabilitative justice enough so that the leading rehabilitative justice organization in this state, Smart Justice, endorsed me for governor and nobody else. And let me talk about how that looks. Look, we have been coming from an era of mass racist incarceration that absolutely characterized California. And
yes,
part of the way to a rehabilitative system that depends on the idea of redemption, second chances, and treatment. Now, it's absolutely critical that we keep our streets and our communities safe. But having said that, working towards, and I have pushed, we have 20 people in Sacramento who work for progressive policies and have for 11 years since 2015. And one of the big things we've pushed is racial, economic, and criminal justice for that system to be more just. So we've worked against things like sentence enhancements successfully. We have worked to decertify officers who misbehave. We specifically worked to end the state's relationship with any private prisons. In fact, I believe Smart Justice acknowledges that my work has gone on for way over a decade because I believe that people need a second chance. I believe it's much better for them and for society to treat them as people who made a serious mistake and give them a chance for rehabilitation and redemption. And let me say this, that's a big reason I left my hedge fund. Walked away 14 years ago because I felt like this is putting pressure on me in ways that I don't like. I only want to do things that accord with my values. And I would say to people, look, I have worked for rehabilitative justice very hard. I continue to. And the prison guards are spending millions against me, whereas Smart Justice has endorsed me. And I would say, look, I think I made a mistake and I've worked hard to more than make up for it. Mm-hmm. I want people to give me the grace that I'm giving other people to say, you can make a mistake, you can rehabilitate yourself, you can get redemption. And I believe that's
what you're kind of like a rehabilitated billionaire, even though you still are a billionaire. I mean, you're a rehabilitated hedge fund manager. I had a joke in 2020, Tom, which was that you're like what happens when Michael Bloomberg gets visited by the ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future. Is that sort of accurate?
Look, I know Mike and I respect him, and I'm a very, very different
but he's person. Definitely
needs
to be visited by a few ghosts. I mean, that's just my opinion.
One of the things I said in 2020 is I'm for reparations for the descendants of enslaved people in America.
I was going to ask you that, actually.
Mike looked at me like, you should have your head examined, my friend.
Yes.
But just so, you know, look, I'm a progressive. You can look at my stances, but you can look at my life. I've spent the last 14 years, and before I left, working for these things, I've continuously worked for them. My platform is about change. That if we think we need to change things for working people in California, then we need to actually change things. And it's not at the edges or by doing it better, by changing things. And there's no one else who has that platform, and there's no one else taking on the corporate special interests. And Javier Becerra is taking their money and doing their bidding. It's really different. That is how California has worked. Big oil gives you money and you go on the air and say, these are good guys. We need them.
We need Chevron.
Yes.
I believe is what he said. Last question. Well, a couple. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see whether you get kicked off. You have condemned Israel's crimes in Gaza and the West Bank, as well as this current war on Iran, which is very much game on, I guess, as of today. I know that some Californians don't understand how it might impact us or the role that we could play. I'm going to spell it out and ask you a question, because let's follow the money. Many of the tech firms that call California home, I'm thinking of Google and Microsoft, are also invested in the weapons industry, increasingly in military tech, and specifically with Israel, helping them surveil and kill Palestinians, whether in Gaza or the West Bank. And they have not been held accountable for any of that. There is what is called the Boycott, Divestment, Sanctions movement. It's a nonviolent movement. It's the same kind of movement that inspired the overthrowing of apartheid in South Africa around Palestinian human rights in Israel and Palestine. Would you, as governor, support a statewide economic boycott of Israel, which is in violation of international law, and perhaps sanctions on the companies that would do business with Israel itself?
So let me say this, Francesca. I make a distinction between the Netanyahu government and the criminal acts that they have committed, and the way they're behaving and their actions and the entire state of Israel. So do I understand that the United States has indirectly supported what they were doing for the last 10 years, the Netanyahu government?
Indirectly, very direct. What about the Israeli military? What about the Israeli military? Yeah, Do you think that companies who are invested in genocide should be held accountable?
No, and that's my point. Yes, I do. But I see that as different from companies in Israel that have nothing to do whatsoever with the Netanyahu government or the wars or all that stuff. So I see that as a big distinction. But when I said indirectly, let me explain why I said that. Look, you would say directly, and I know you're right, but people didn't see it because we were supplying weapons, we were supplying money, but we weren't supplying troops. We weren't actually doing it. We were enabling them to do it. In Iran, that's not true. We're now doing it. And we can see specifically in Iran, it's hitting Californians. It's hitting them at the pump, $1.50 a gallon. They're taking $200 billion of our dollars that could be used for healthcare and schools and using it to blow up a country. This is now hitting us in multiple ways. And it's direct because it's our troops.
Yeah.
It's everything is being done as an open partner. And I think it's much clearer now that what we're seeing has absolutely no rationale or reason for the United States to be doing it that I can see, other than our desire to control the oil market. And it is a failure. However, the idea was we have.
That's not even working. But yes, I mean, look, I'm not hearing a solid answer on that, but I'm glad that you at least understand there is a private responsibility. And I would love to see a California that divested from this kind of really heinous military technology.
And as an example, there's a company, Palantir, that is really devoted to the defense industry.
Absolutely.
A right
and works with Israel.
Yes, but devoted to supporting the Trump administration, to supporting these wars. And that's, you know, what I'm saying is there's some companies where it's very obvious. That's one. And let me say that one of the founders of Palantir is a big supporter of Matt Mahan. And so when we think it doesn't reach into California politics, I can tell you that it does.
Yeah.
So what we're seeing here is absolutely, we should be pushing back against those companies and against really what I think of as the criminal behavior of the Netanyahu government, and are now openly being an open partner as opposed to a supporting partner.
Right. A tacit little accomplice. Last. What do you make of your two Republican opponents? Do you feel like maybe California is finally ready to like embrace its full diversity and like elect a man under 5'2"?
Let me say this.
I mean, I just feel like we are all about inclusivity, you know? And
Dalton is supported by Donald Trump and he's supporting Donald Trump. And what does that mean? It means he supports ICE, even though he doesn't say it. It means he supports kicking millions of Californians off Medi-Cal, although he doesn't state it. It means he's absolutely supports this war. Look, there are two other things I will say. First of all, he's an election denier, which is insane. But more than that, Steve Hilton has supported extraditing Californian doctors to Louisiana to be criminally prosecuted for performing abortions in California, which are strictly legal. So let me say this. There is no reason that any Californian, including Republicans, should be voting for Steve Hilton. That is a joke. He is supporting a president who refuses to pay us our FEMA money, who sends in ICE agents, who kicks people off Medi-Cal so rich people and big corporations can have lower tax rates. And this man wants to be the governor of California. Literally Republicans should refuse him because he is beyond the pale as far as I'm concerned. There's no excuse for any of those positions if you're just a normal Californian.
Yeah. Okay, look, let's say the midterms are rigged, Trump becomes forever president. Should California secede from the union? Yes or no?
Yes.
Thank you.
Can I answer it, Francesca? We cannot give in to fascism. We cannot give in to fascism. This country is built around equality, democracy, and freedom. Mm-hmm. If there is a fascist takeover of this country, we have to resist it. That's why I tried to impeach Trump in 2017. That's why I'm standing up against ICE and calling them a criminal organization and being willing to prosecute. We need to stand up against fascism, and that's the truth.
And if not, we can secede from the union. Tom Steyer, running for California governor. There's another debate tomorrow night. Everyone tune in. And thank you so much for stopping by. I do think it speaks volumes, actually, that you did, and I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. And thank you all for your questions. I know it was too short. I wish it were longer. I wish we could talk about the best burrito spot in San Francisco and why it is not La Taqueria, but it is Taqueria Cancun. I'll read some of your comments and give my thoughts. I think that was really great of Tom Steyer to stop by. Didn't get a straight answer on some questions. He thinks the billionaires should exist. I'm getting that, but they should be taxed a little bit more. I think they should be taxed into millionairehood, which is really not a bad place to be. So that was interesting. Let's see. We didn't get too close of an answer on like immigration and specifically how to shut down detention facilities that are harming community members right now. But I thought we did get a fairly good response when it comes to something I didn't even really had planned to ask him, which is about criminal justice reform, the mass incarceration system. I was happy to hear him say he supports reparations. I think that especially when you look at California's inequality, y'all, it is through the roof when it comes to comparing Black and Latino Californians to, let's say, white and Asian Californians. There's a huge racialized income gap there. And so I think that we need to talk about how to address that. And I think reparations would be part of it, but of course, so would universal social services. definitely wasn't ready to say that we should, you know, sanction Google or Microsoft, or support a statewide economic boycott. And of course, you know, giving us the like Netanyahu's very different from Israel, when I think we all know Netanyahu is Israel. Netanyahu's been Israel. Netanyahu is honestly the center of Israel. That dude is a centrist when it comes to just how extreme Israeli politics are. But, you know, look, we work with libs all the time. We have to get libs across the finish line, and we have to make sure they, you know, listen to the people. So honestly, just again, I actually am very glad he even took the time to come on. Let's see. Just Julie says, I feel like I'm one degree away from being able to ask this billionaire how he really thinks this is all going to work. Sean says, Francesca is backed by billionaires confirmed. I mean, we have to send him the Patreon link. We'll see if he joins. But that's like a handkerchief, dude. He's got $2 billion. It's chill. Not so amazing, Jake. Franny's a good interviewer. Appreciate the pushback. Of course, anytime. Sean says, honestly, Starr is the best progressive choice. If I can hold my nose and vote for Biden, I can hold my nose and vote for a billionaire. Look, I think when you survey who's actually in this race, and I think Katie Porter is a strong candidate. I don't think she's polling in a place that in a month she can win. And I also, you know, am very curious as to where she stands on Israel and Bibi Netanyahu. I mean, unlike Katie Porter, Tom Steyer has not met with Netanyahu or traveled to Israel. And I think that really does matter. Again, I'd be curious about his opinion on Mamdani. Thank you. I want to know what he thinks of Silicon Valley tech and VC bro oligarchs. They have some eugenics ideas. I think he probably thinks they're weird and they're psychotic. And so when we get him again, I will like to ask him that specifically. And Real Britain's is based Francisy from the Union. Yes. I think it's really, look, the fact that he's able to even go there on issues, and we didn't even really, fuck, I forgot to ask him about AI. Because here's the way I see Tom Steyer. I think Tom Steyer is a billionaire who still deeply believes in capitalism, but believes we can have benevolent, good capitalism. He doesn't say that, but that's what I hear from him. And I think it's on California progressives and leftists to prove to him, should he be elected, that that is not the case, that it is a us versus them type situation here. And we don't have time to sort of engage in these halfway measures. That being said, the measures that he is engaged in, I see as pulling money out of the private enterprise, whether it's creation of, you know, again, more investment in housing and specifically social housing, in his taxing of oil companies and all this. I think the prosecution of ICE, all of that, I think is really important. Of course, going after private healthcare industry and executives vis-a-vis single payer, that's going to be big. I see him at least setting out in his little gubernatorial journey with a better set of broad structural change than anyone else who is in this race, who's on the ballot and who stands a chance of winning. Okay, y'all, I'm just gonna be honest. I know, you know, that people obviously want me to interview the Peace and Freedom candidate, Ramsey Robinson. I think that would be dope. So I'm gonna see if I can make it happen. And of course, Butch Ware is gonna be on this show tomorrow. He is not on the ballot, but he is running for California governor. So politically, Tom Steyer is not my thing. Strategically, in terms of someone I think could be susceptible to pressure, who I could work with, and who I'm, again, as a leftist voting, I'm just picking who I want to fight. I'm picking who I want to go to battle with. To me, Tom Steyer is someone I would rather fight than Javier Becerra. I think Javier Becerra, who openly has said, you know, I need Chevron, Chevron needs me. And I can play this for y'all, but we need to listen. You know, we should be, I need to find the original source on this, but this is him. Jordan Yule put this out. This is Javier Becerra saying, it's silly to be mad at Chevron, even though they have polluted community after community here in this state. It's silly to be mad at Chevron. I need Chevron. Chevron needs me. And I will not take a check.
Chevron, you know, that's a problem with politics. They're not the bad guy. You need Chevron. I need Chevron. My people of the state of California need Chevron. You know, it's unfortunate that we sort of use these tags and we paint with these broad brushes. Chevron wants to give me a check. That's their prerogative.
Okay, that's disqualifying for me. It is disqualifying for me who's taking someone who says, I have no role in this. If someone wants to use me as their hand puppet, I will open up my asshole and let them. Like, that's just disqualifying for me. And of course, you know, other Democrats in the race, Matt or Mike May, I don't even care about his name, but Mahan, the governor of, the mayor of San Jose right now, is basically just a little tech bro. He's like a fucking Patagonia puffer vest personified. That's him. And then there's Katie Porter, right? So given this situation that Californians are about a month away from, I would rather fight Tom Steyer. I'm just straight up, I would rather fight Tom Steyer. So that's where I'm at. I don't know what this is in reference to, Nikki Chris. Didn't you ask the most important question? Would he back that ass up again? Did he say that in the debate in 2020? Sean, his AI policy is probably his best policy, in my opinion. He's the only one who's taken a strong stance on reasonably regulating AI. 100%. Here's my problem with Tom Steyer's stance on AI. It's not enough to regulate. There are new data centers. One is being planned in the Imperial Valley right now that is going to be guzzling 750. 750 gallons of water a day. A day. That's fresh water. 750,000 gallons a day. To me, you can't regulate that. Like, I don't know what to say to that. To me, it's moratorium, baby. So like for me, if Tom Steyer is serious about his climate stuff, which he wrote books on this, he's lobbied and campaigned on this, you have to be far more adversarial to the AI tech industry. But the fact that you're even shouting him out for having the only platform that's about regulation shows what a dismal state this governor's race is in. And again, Butch Ware is joining me tomorrow, May 5th. At 1 p.m. Pacific to talk more about, you know, where he stands. So again, this is the best idea in the race, but again, just strategically, this is someone who can likely win. So, let's see. Oh my God. Steyer danced. That's right. Oh my God. How I didn't ask him about dancing on stage. Dude, I remember this. He did dance on the stage with Juvenile. Does he apologize for that? Should we cancel him for that? Anyway, guys, look, Steyer's, if you're in California, Steyer's going to be hosting a lot of events. You can go to them. You can ask him questions. You can tell your people to ask him questions. I would encourage you to do that. Try to do my part. And again, this is a billionaire who thinks that we can still do some reform. Let's, you know, in my opinion, we have a lot more to do than that, but even if we got single payer, that's win territory for me. That's win territory. I'm dubious. And as a Californian, I have to take responsibility. Like, it can't just be like, Tom, what are you going to do for me? Or Javier, what are you going to do for me? You know, Javier Becerra, by the way, openly says, I'm for single payer, but I don't think it's going to happen effectively. He's like, I'm for reform, which is, that's a Gavin Newsom stance as well. It's like, oh, I'm for it, but it's not going to happen. So we'll just do these other reforms. But for me, as a Californian, as a citizen, someone who lives here, we have to also put outside pressure in order to give our governors this sort of political, runway to make something like that happen. So I'd be curious to see, you know, what new efforts crop up to, you know, revive CalCare. And we'll be going forward talking about that for those of you who are here and who care about California politics. You know, New York and California, you know, they got the New York Health Act. We've got CalCare. Both of them have been stuck in the assembly. There are massive fossil fuel interests who are against this. So anyway, I appreciate y'all for being here. And thank you, John Davis, for joining the Frantifa. You too, if you're watching on YouTube, can go and click the join button. And you not only get these amazing interviews, but I am rolling out a members only interview series. What? Yes, it is dropping this weekend, our very first installation. I will physically be in a studio, y'all. They're so great. We've got our first two interviews are with, again, very California-centric, but fear ye not, it will be much broader. Kenneth Mejia, City Comptroller of Los Angeles, as well as Melina Abdullah of the Black Lives Matter grassroots movement. Really good conversations. I can't wait to share them with you all. And you get full access by being a member on YouTube, a paid patron, which is where you get all these perks. Patreon.com/Bituation Room. What are you doing? So many perks, including shout outs, including free merch, including discounts on the American Prospect, including access to my Ask Me Anythings. And then also if you're a Substack member, you can become a paid Substack member and get access to those as well. And Twitch, don't worry, I have not forgotten about you. We are figuring out a way. There's like about 50, or there's only like, first of all, it's the sexiest 54 people of your life, but there's a small cohort of Twitch subscribers, and I'm going to find out a way to make sure you guys get the exclusive content too. So, until tomorrow, I'm going to stop running my mouth and I will see you back in the Bituation Room. Matt Bernstein, Bushware. Don't miss it. Bye-bye.